Welcome to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So pleased you could join us today for our special draft recap edition of the podcast. As usual, I have my partners in crime with me, Nate Atkins and Hub Arkish. And guys, we've had a few days to let this draft sink in, one of the weirder ones in recent memory. Before we know, we'll have some time to get a little bit of rest too, but not yet. No rest for the weary. Let's break down the draft. But before we do that, how are you guys doing today? Nate, what's new?
Too much. Just trying to recover a little bit from that long weekend, and we got some annual magazines we're pumping out, but still just trying to wrap my head around a little bit of the craziness from that first round, whether it's Laremy Tunsil falling, whether it's the trades that followed, the teams rushing to the top two, whether it's the whole derby for Paxton Lynch. It just was, we anticipated a crazy night, and that's pretty much how it turned out.
There was certainly a lot to chew on, and Nate kind of alluded to some of the weird goings-on in the top of the draft, and Nate and I are still a little bit newer to this, but Hub obviously has been doing this for quite a while. I know he thinks it was one of the weirder drafts he's seen. Why don't you kind of give us your perspective on what made this so bizarre?
Well, you know, I think things settled down a little bit once you got through the first half of that first round. My perspective on why this seems so bizarre is because as recently as 10, 15 years ago, it was us at Pro Football Weekly, it was Mel at ESPN, and a couple other people putting information out there. Now, there are so many self-proclaimed draft experts, and there are so many different places to look at charts and rankings. Everybody thinks they're a scout. You know, everybody looks at these picks and says, oh my God, he fell too far, he went too high. And in reality, a lot of that isn't true if you know what you're doing. But even beyond that, obviously, there was some strange stuff. I mean, you know, the Miami Dolphins have a new theme song. I assume we'll hear a lot of Deep Purple Smoke on the Water. And you know, you go from there to one crazy thing after another. I think you were destined to have a wild first round when arguably the fifth or sixth best prospect in the draft in Carson Wentz and no better than the 15th or 16th best prospect in the draft, Jared Goff, went 1-2 and not even in that order. You know, so it started right there with the Rams, to a lot of people's thinking, taking the wrong guy. Of course, Jerry Jones goes off the board, and I can't argue with him. You know, I love Zeke Elliott, but to leave Jalen Ramsey there, the more I've thought about it, that was just absurd. And then, you know, the two injured linebackers, Jalen Smith went a lot higher than anybody thought. Miles Jack slipped lower than anybody thought. It goes on and on. So, you know, there was a lot of strangeness, but I think it led to a lot of fun for a lot of people, actually, trying to follow it and figure it all out.
You know, the term red flags is certainly, you know, synonymous with the draft, for better or worse. It's a big part of the equation, certainly, as the money continues to grow and teams' investments, obviously, they're going to unturn every single stone they can to try and dig on these kids. But can you remember another situation where a red flag, and such a huge one at that, with Laremy Tunsil popped up 20 minutes before the draft started? Is that, you know, kind of the byproduct of this social media, this new world we're living in? And how do you think teams adjusted after that happened?
Well, I'm going to pause for 1 second to see if those latecomers have figured out my smoke on the water reference. And then, you know, it obviously... it's social media. It's a problem. It's something that we in the media, in the theoretically traditional, at least J school guys or communication school guys, have a problem with, and it's been going on for a while. And the answer to your question is no. I think more teams reacted incorrectly than correctly. The Miami Dolphins got lucky. The kid. After, is it called a Chiba? That's what I've heard. The whole gas mask bong thing. I don't know. I've heard that reference. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't either. That's why I'm asking you. Not suggesting you guys should know, but I thought maybe some of
our listeners at home, he's looking directly at me with that question, but that's okay. I don't know the answer either. Hub, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's because the three of them I found in your closet. No, seriously, guys. We're all having fun here. A good buddy of mine, who's an ex-NFL player, told me it's called a Chiba. And so I'm just asking if anybody out there knows. Here's the bottom line. If you talk to NFL teams, most of the front offices don't necessarily even deduct significantly for failed pot tests anymore, because the reality is a lot of kids who go to college in this country experiment with pot. The reality is we've now confirmed that picture was at least two and maybe as much as 3 years old. All you got to is look at it. You can tell it's not a current picture. And so I'm not excusing it. I'm not saying anything about it is right, but it didn't make him less of a prospect. And that's the part. I think the problem with Tunsil is it wasn't the only red flag. You know, coming into the draft, we knew the last week or so that Ronnie Stanley and Jack Conklin were shooting up draft boards based on their own ability. There was no clear spread anymore, so that made it easier for the Ravens and the Titans to come back up and take one of the other ones. But all these other teams, I mean, the Bears go from 11 to 9. You would think maybe to get, everybody knew the Giants liked Leonard Floyd, but the Bears with a huge need at left tackle, leave him there and take a reach, a prospect. It may turn out to be a great pick. You just don't know. You know, I look at even the San Diego Chargers at number 3. We're working on our magazines, as Nate mentioned, and I've done some new statistical ratings for offensive lines that I don't think anybody's ever seen before. I think they're kind of fun. The San Diego Chargers were the worst offensive line in football last year, and they leave him on the board to take Joey Bosa, who may be the best player in the draft, but clearly belongs in a 4-3 defense, not in their 3-4. So there was all these teams who didn't expect to have the opportunity, then passed on it. And Miami finally said, well, wait a minute. You know, I mean, and they had a need, not as great a need as some of the teams in front of them. I think the Dolphins got a great pick.
Yeah, with Laremy Tunsil, I mean, certainly the you bring up a great point about how crucial is it that a guy is smoking pot, and especially for 2 or 3 years ago or whatever it was. I think the bigger concern is that he's doing it right into a video. And even if that's 3 years old, he's a top college football player who can easily get in trouble for that and doesn't seem to have the awareness to not do that kind of thing. So I think that's a bigger concern than the actual, you know, crime or what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, very much to your point, one NFL coach, head coach, told me exactly that. He said, I don't really care about the, he didn't call it a cheat, but whatever it was. He said, you know, the pot, I mean, we know we've got kids who smoke pot. He said, but it's the issue of character, of maturity, of doing it. But again, this speaks to the point of it was 2 or 3 years ago. We don't know how long. Still probably not the best idea. But now you're not dealing with a 21-year-old. Now you're dealing with a 17 or 18-year-old. And you know, anybody who's a parent or anyone who's recently passed 17 or 18 knows you do stuff like this. So what I left out, though, is that the thing about Tunsil, you've also got the 7-game suspension. Mm-hmm. You've got the horrible problems with his stepfather. You've got an assault. I mean, you've got all kinds of stuff that's going on, and it's all getting too close to the draft.
Right.
And so I think that hurt him probably. Nothing hurt him as much as the video, but the video on top of all that is why he slipped as low as he did.
That, especially in addition to the fact that teams had him rated so closely with Ronnie Stanley of Notre Dame and Jack Conklin from Michigan State. We've had sources say that some teams already had Stanley rated higher than Tunsil before this whole video thing came out. I think what surprises me more is after you get past where the Titans take Jack Conklin when they trade it up to 8, you have the Bears trade to 9 and they pass on Tunsil. You have the Giants at 10 pass on Tunsil. Both of those teams badly need offensive tackles, reached for much bigger projects, players who are not nearly as ready to play. And the Dolphins ended up being the big winners because we all thought moving from 8 down to 13 was a bad idea because they're going to miss out on Ezekiel Elliott. They would have missed out on him anyway. They moved to 13 and get a guy we originally projected as the number one pick, and they pick up two starters in Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell. So I think Adam Gase and his guys did pretty well here.
And on the heels of that, and I agree, I haven't loved the Dolphins offseason, but I thought Laremy Tunsil in that spot was not only terrific value, but you know, could turn out to, we might look back on it as the best pick in this draft. Interesting to see Adam Gase kind of thinking outside the box now that he has this big controversial prospect on board. Said they're going to scrap the rookie minicamp idea. They're not going to have these kids practicing, but instead kind of have classroom sessions that work on certainly the schemes that they're installing, but also off the field stuff, financial management, and you know, other health and conditioning issues. And I just thought that was kind of neat, a young forward thinking head coach responding the right way after making a pick like Tunsil that's going to receive so much scrutiny. So it'll be fascinating to watch how that situation unfolds. Guys, we're going to turn the page, and I know that we all know by now you don't do snap judgments of a draft. So let's do some snap judgments of the draft. Everyone loves it. We are going to preface it. You don't know for 3 years, but it doesn't prevent us from being able to find teams that we believe found good value. And again, these are all the teams that down the road are going to end up busting out. So we don't really know what we're talking about, but it's just fun to discuss. I'm going to throw it to you, Hub. A draft or two that you really liked, maybe one draft that left you scratching your head a little bit after the weekend.
All right, I have to go back for one more second on the Miami thing, only because you know, Adam Gase, we were close to him based here in Chicago last year. It's been a rough off season for him in Miami.
Yep.
But in all fairness, not really from much of anything he's done. I think letting Lamar Miller get away and then swinging and missing on the kid from Denver obviously didn't do him any favors. But the reality is that most of the grief in Miami is because of a couple of meatheads like Ndamukong Suh and Mario Williams not showing up and people getting concerned. And now you bring in Tunsil. You know, is he going to be impacted by those two meatheads? Right. So I think that is the one minor concern you have there. I'm fully convinced that his plans for his rookie camp were forged before, you know, before the draft and before anything to do with Laremy Tunsil.
And so, doesn't Mike Tannenbaum just have kind of a history of just telling his coaches, okay, you figure it out. I'm going to bring the players in and you kind of have to figure out how to make the rest work.
Well, he's got more history than that. He's got history of screwing up franchises. And I've been outspoken about this, but you look at what a mess he made of the Jets. And right. So he doesn't have his hand in these plans for the rookie camp. I think the plans are fascinating and probably a great idea. He does meddle in personnel on occasion and shouldn't. But it'll be, you know, be curious to see how Miami works out. I love that they got Tunsil. Their draft overall, not necessarily special. I got to tell you guys, the more that I have studied this thing, the two that I don't like, and this is not going to surprise anybody, are the Rams and the Eagles. You do not give up what they gave up for one player, especially when those players aren't sure things. You look at the needs of those two teams and their complete inability to address their needs in this draft because they didn't have enough good picks left. So those two right off the bat really bother me what they did. I look at the San Francisco 49ers, and this is why you don't grade drafts before kids have played. It may turn out to be one of the all-time great drafts, but just based on what we know about our rankings, with 11 picks to get DeForest Buckner, which is pretty good at 7 because he was the top defensive end, you know, prospect in the draft. But he's the same player from the same school that they drafted last year in Eric Armstead, who didn't work out as well. Now, I know Buckner is a better prospect, but now you've got these 2-6-7, 300-pound 5 techniques and real problems with what you're going to put around him. And then in the 10 remaining picks, other than Aaron Burbridge, you know, in 6, which might be a nice value pick, but I don't think he's going to be an all-pro. I mean, I look at the kid from Stanford. You trade up into the first round to get a guard you can take in the third round. You look at some of his other prospects. I just thought Trent Baalke had a really rough day. The two drafts that impressed me absolutely the most, the Tennessee Titans, I don't know a lot about what they did in the later rounds, but Jack Conklin, Kevin Dodd, Austin Johnson out of Penn State, who I just loved, Derrick Henry, and then Kevin Byard out of Middle Tennessee State. I think their first 5 picks are all going to be really good football players, not just contributors, but every one of those guys has a chance to be very good to possibly even Pro Bowl caliber. I absolutely loved what the Green Bay Packers did throughout. I thought that they had a spectacular draft. I think getting Kenny Clark was a perfect fit for them at 27. I'm convinced from a number of sources that they traded right in front of the Bears at 49, knowing the Bears were going to take Spriggs from Indiana and plucked him off the board. And then they get Kyle Murphy in the 6th round. So he's more of a controversial report. I've seen some really good reports, some questionable ones. I thought offensive line was a real need for the Packers. Other people were saying, you know, oh, well, the 5 starters are great. Yeah, but the 5 starters are never on the field. I think Jason Spriggs is probably as good a pick as Taylor Decker. And then the 2 linebackers, I know Fackrell out of Utah State is more of an outside guy, but Blake Martinez inside. I've talked to scouts who think he could very well be the best inside linebacker to come out of this draft. And then, of course, guys, everybody loves Jacksonville. I'm not as high on it as some, only because I don't know anything about their later round picks. But, you know, you got to consider Dante Fowler Jr. part of this draft, much like Kevin White with the Bears, top 10 picks who didn't play last year. The problem is that you look at Dante Fowler Jr. and Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack, you could have 3 perennial All-Pros. You could have 2 knees in Fowler and Jack that never work out. So I'm not ready to be as high on Jacksonville as other people are.
It is just fascinating, though, and I think, you know, anywhere you look, you're going to hear a lot of praise for the Jaguars. Hub kind of tempered it a little bit, but still, to get Ramsey and Jack, of course, without having to trade back into the first round is pretty remarkable. And then a lot of praise being thrown at Ryan Pace's Bears, and it just, to me, is so fascinating that it doesn't even really take into consideration that they both have extra first-round picks, obviously, in Dante Fowler and Kevin White. So pretty exciting young influx that those two clubs are dealing with. Nate, we're just going to make this kind of quick, but you tell me, who do you like and who don't you like and why?
Yeah, Jaguars are an easy pick. I'm going to go with another team from the AFC I really like and sort of go a different direction from Hub. I'm going to go with the Chargers. I love their pick of Joey Bosa at 3. I think they could have been fine getting Jalen Ramsey, obviously, but they've got more help at cornerback, and they need a pass rush. They need a guy who can step in for a regime that really needs to win now and make an instant impact. He probably has the highest floor in the draft. And I think he's totally fit for a 3-4 defense. You watch him at Ohio State, and he was obviously a 4-3 end there, but he did a lot of different things. His last year there, he commanded double teams. He dropped into coverage. He has a lot of room to grow in his frame. And then for them to address offensive line the rest of the draft, they got a center, they got a guard, they got a fullback to block for Melvin Gordon, and yet to get Hunter Henry in the second round, a tight end to develop behind Antonio Gates, I thought was great. My least favorite draft was the Eagles. We already touched on that a little bit, so I'll throw out the Broncos there because I was a big fan of them trading up to get Paxton Lynch, but after that I thought they did almost nothing. They reached in the second round for Adam Gotsis, a defensive tackle we didn't even have rated, who has no pass rush ability that he's shown. They didn't address their offensive line or their inside linebackers. They're probably their two biggest needs through the first four rounds, and this is a team that needs to win now, and yet they spend a pick on a fullback and a punter, and yet they don't look at inside linebacker. They get one guard. I just didn't understand their direction after Paxton Lynch.
I do feel the necessity to add that the Joey Bosa love may come from a Mizzou J school grad. And for those of you who don't know, he grew up in the shadow of the horseshoe in Columbus. So no, I'm just kidding. Bosa's a great football
player. And the Bosa hate from you is a Michigan grad.
There's no hate. Bosa's a great football player. And if they played a 4-3, I would have taken him with the third overall pick, too. From one anonymous source, guys, one of the least happy people in Chicago was Bosa's dad, that he went to a 3-4 team. Nothing against San Diego, but even his own dad said, not the best fit.
Interesting. I also did like the Chargers draft. Tom Telesco needed a strong one. I felt like there was some nice diversity to it, and Hunter Henry is one of my favorite picks in the draft. I just think finding an heir apparent to a Hall of Famer in Antonio Gates was a smart move, and I think Henry will be able to help out right away. It's a big assist to Phillip Rivers. One draft that I liked a lot in the NFC East was Washington and Scott McLuhan. I felt like he was maybe backed into a corner a little bit with the Josh Norman signing, and that's not to say I didn't like the Norman signing. He's obviously going to help their football team immensely, but it seemed like that kind of came from up above. So how does McLuhan respond? He goes and finds outstanding value at the top of the draft, and all three of the top rounds gets Josh Doctson, picks up an extra pick along the way for one of the best receivers in the draft, if not the best. He's kind of looking long-term past Pierre Garçon, comes back and gets Sua Cravens, who I know Pro Football Weekly and Greg Gabriel, of course, was even higher on than most, has him as a top 10 player in this draft, and the way that he's going to fit into Joe Barry's defense is very exciting, whether he's going to play that hybrid Deion Buchanan role or a dime linebacker like they're suggesting. I just thought to get him in the middle of the second round was really terrific value. And then Kendall Fuller continuing with the value picks. Obviously, the latest Fuller brother to enter the NFL is coming off the serious knee injury, but he's a local kid that team knows well, and to get him in the third round made a ton of sense. So at the top, it's really impressive. And then when you kind of keep digging and looking deeper, McLuhan picked up three extra draft picks for next year. So once they got into day three, he kept trading down and picking up extra picks. And he's also going to be set up very, very well heading into 2017. So impressive stuff. This is nitpicky. I actually liked their draft. We all had two divisions to work on. I had the NFC North and the AFC South. Those are the two I know the best. So I'm not going to say it was a bad draft. It wasn't by any means, but I do have some questions about the Houston Texans and what they did. It wasn't so much the approach, because obviously everyone who follows the NFL, even one inkling, knows that, you know, Rick Smith is building around Brock Osweiler. He's got his guy now, everything from Lamar Miller to going in the draft and getting Braxton Miller and Will Fuller, of course, Tyler Irvin, the little lightning scat back. All smart moves, all going to continue to make that offense look just incredibly improved on paper. But I don't know if the value was outstanding. They traded up to get Will Fuller when I didn't think they had to, and I think lost a six-round pick along the way. The center they got, Zach Martin's brother, Nick Martin, looks like he's going to start right away and be a fine football player, but he may have been a slight reach as well. And then there just wasn't a lot of help for defense, and J.J. Watt has really been overburdened in recent years. They let Jared Krick go. He's kind of just a guy, but they didn't do much to replace really anything on defense aside from DJ Reader with their last pick. So we'll see. That offense is being expected to take a huge step, obviously, along the way. And, you know, if it doesn't, Rick Smith's going to have some problems on his hands, but he's got some nice personnel to work with. Guys, just kind of switching gears. We're getting ready to wrap up here. Anything else that jumps out that we didn't hit on in terms of draft that needs to be mentioned here? Is there one kind of storyline that, you know, again, we didn't exactly hit on, but just feel like is a lingering one that's going to last with this draft? I'll come to you first, Tom.
Well, relative to the draft, I guess you start with the reality that Cleveland and Tennessee are already loaded for bear again next year. You know, right. They come back with multiple number ones. I think that people are trying to change the conversation now about the quarterbacks. All of a sudden, everybody's getting excited about Deshaun Watson and finding other arms, when the perception was you had to get these kids high because it was going to be a weak position next year. I still think it is going to be weak, but I thought it was weak this year. You know, beyond that, you had a bunch of new drafters this year, and this is a conversation that we haven't had much. But, you know, Ryan Pace in just his second year, along with, I believe, Jason Light. You've now got Quinn and Robinson. In Detroit and Tennessee coming off their first drafts and both looking to have done fairly well. You've got some of the guys who, to me, were on the hot seat who I really question. I look in Atlanta, you know, and I mean, you've got Scott Pioli down there working with Dimitroff, and I really like these guys. I mean, Neal at 17 to me was one of the great reaches of this draft. And so, you know, I think that there's going to be a real focus. There's so many young GMs in the league right now, and a few more going into this year on the hot seat. It's going to really impact the way the draft works in coming seasons.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway just from this draft is it's an obvious one, but just how valuable the whole passing game is in every level, and that's offense and defense. You saw something like more than 20% of all draft picks were defensive backs in some form, and you see those guys from Alabama, Reggie Ragland, Jaron Reed, and A'shaun Robinson, these stout run defenders all dropped to the second round. You know, that's my takeaway, is that they you look at the Super Bowl and you have Cam Newton, who kind of puts that team on his back, has a season of his life, and then he runs into a wall with those pass rushers and Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware. And that's the way to – you got to get a great quarterback, and teams are trading up to do that. You also got to find a way to defend them with either great cornerbacks or great pass rushers, and it seems like teams took notice.
Great stuff from both Hub and Nate. We are going to take a quick break, but when we return on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, we will bring in draft guru Greg Gabriel to tell us what he thought of this strange draft. We will have that and more in just a moment. Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks for being with us. We just had a fun, info-filled session with Hub Arkish and Nate Atkins. We're all the so-called draft experts, but we figure we better bring in someone that there's no doubt about. Greg Gabriel, you've heard from him recently on this podcast. Obviously, longtime NFL scout, our Pro Football Weekly draft guide author, and we wanted to bring in Greg to kind of get his thoughts on how a crazy weekend unfolded, and we will do that right now. Greg, how are you? Have you had time to get any sleep yet?
Oh, yeah. Getting a little.
I'm glad to hear it. I know it's been, you know, it's been a crazy process, of course, and we are just so thrilled with the work you did for us and elsewhere. Of course, our listeners can check out all of Greg's grades still up, all kinds of good analysis at ProFootballWeekly.com, and we'll just go ahead and jump right in. Greg, do you remember another draft as strange as this one, particularly as it relates to Laremy Tunsil and everything that happened to the young man last Thursday?
Well, obviously, we've never had a draft before where social media had a huge influence. This was the first one. I'm just wondering if it's going to be the last one,
right?
You know, going forward. But it had the drop of Tunsil had a huge effect on the first round. First, let's get back to the situation itself. I mean, 20 minutes before the draft, everything was A-OK, and it looked as if Tunsil could go as high as 3 to the Chargers, maybe go a little further than that, but not drop that far. There was some talk that the Chargers liked Ronnie Stanley over Tunsil if they were going to, in fact, take a player at that tackle position. But once this video hit, that changed a lot of things. San Diego then went in a direction that nobody really anticipated them going. They took Joey Bosa, the defensive end from Ohio State. Not that Bosa didn't warrant being selected that high. It's just a lot of people thought they would go with an offensive lineman. I was told the morning of the draft that the Cowboys were either going to take Zeke Elliott or Joey Bosa. With Bosa, you know, out of the way now, having gone at 3 to San Diego, that made sure that Elliott was going to be the pick at Dallas. So that went pretty much as expected. And the same with Jalen Ramsey going to the Jaguars. But the first surprise then were the Tunsil effect was really with Ronnie Stanley going to the Ravens. After the video showed up on Twitter, the Ravens quickly took Tunsil's name off their board, and he just started to plummet. And he ends up going down all the way to 13, and that had an effect really on a few teams' drafts because the Giants that morning, Gary Myers, who is a very close follower of the Giants, works for the New York Daily News, he had tweeted out Thursday morning that Conklin was, in fact, the Giants' pick, not Leonard Floyd, and where it was anticipated for a long time that Leonard Floyd from the Georgia linebacker would be the pick. So then with Tunsil dropping, Conklin became the number two tackle, and Tennessee trades up into the eighth slot to take Conklin. Now that puts the Giants in a bind because they there was no way they were getting their tackle. The Bears, knowing this, then jump in front of the Giants to make sure they don't get their second choice in Floyd. And, you know, that really kind of screwed up the Giants draft and that they were looking to get some help on the offensive line, and throughout the draft ended up not drafting any offensive linemen. And Eli Apple, the tall, long, athletic but raw corner, ends up going to them at the 10th slot.
Do you sense, Greg, in a good recap of what exactly happened? Obviously, our listeners know by now, Laramie Tunsil, you know, videotaped smoking the bong, said it was a couple of years ago, the mask bong, whatever we're going to call it at this point, and it pops up just minutes before the draft begins. This is what leads to his slide. But I fast forward back to the Giants and Jerry Reese appearing to find himself in panic mode. You just mentioned Eli Apple, a very raw prospect. I know you didn't have him. I think you had him roughly closer to 20 than 10 anyway. Did Jerry Reese panic? And I saw an amazing stat that he is now 0-for-72. He has never traded down in a draft since he's become a lead decision maker.
You know, that's common of Giant philosophy. I worked there 17 years.
Right.
Was there when Jerry first came in as an area scout, and I worked with him very closely and know him very well. But going back, I started working there in 1984. George Young was the general manager. He was followed by Ernie Accorsi, and that's just not the Giants' way of doing things, and that was George's philosophy. George was always, let the draft come to you. Don't go attack the draft. And so I think they value their picks. They're not a trade-up type of team. And, you know, and you look at how the draft unfolded, you know, going back a couple weeks or 10 days anyway, Floyd's name was attached to the Giants and attached to the Bears. Well, the Giants were ahead of the Bears, so the Giants, unless there was going to be a trade-up, weren't going to have a problem. But you know, the way things unfolded then on draft night, that changed everything up, and they were put into a situation that I don't think they were totally prepared for, and part of it was the Tunsil thing. So, I mean, that just didn't have an effect on the top five. It had an effect on the top 10, and those things just happen in the draft. And you have to go into the draft being prepared to the fact, and I've always said this, that you got to be prepared for the worst case scenario. And when you aren't prepared for that, then you're in trouble. And I don't know if the Giants were really prepared for the worst case scenario.
Absolutely, Greg. This is Nate Atkins here. Just wanted to ask you about, you brought up Joey Bosa going to the Chargers, how that might have shuffled things a little bit as far as what the Cowboys were going to do. And after that, that's a pick that at the time was the first real surprising one to some people in the draft. It didn't surprise me. And I know you and I've talked about Joey Bosa a lot, about his upside, about maybe if there's J.J. Watt potential there with him. Just was curious about what you thought about the Chargers going that direction rather than a guy like Jalen Ramsey or Laramie Tunsil or Ronnie Stanley and choosing to go with Bosa. What'd you think of that?
Well, you win games on the – you got to have a quarterback, you got to have offensive line and defensive line. Now, that said, in the Chargers scheme, Bosa in their base defense is probably going to be an outside linebacker, and he's plenty athletic enough to play that position. Now, granted, he's not a 4.65, 4.7 guy. He's more of a 4.8 guy. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and you look at tape of their pro day and tape of the combine, he had no problem dropping back into coverage, opening up his hips, planting his foot, driving on the ball, catching the ball, all that thing he does very, very well. And he's not going to drop more than a half a dozen times at most in any given game, because sub packages are played 60% to 70% of the time. He's going to be playing with his hand in the dirt, rushing the passer. That's what they drafted him for. And that at that position, he can have a more direct effect on the outcome of a game than, say, a corner can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about Eli Apple. That was a big surprise, too. I was just curious for you, as you look back at this first round, was there a pick outside of the guys we've mentioned already that you just kind of didn't see coming that kind of surprised you?
Going through the first, no, not really. I mean, I thought Paxton Lynch would go higher than he did. Mm-hmm. With the quarterbacks going one and two, I thought that, you know, because going before the trades were made, it looked like Paxton Lynch's floor was 15 to the Rams. And the Rams trade up to one, the Eagles trade up to two, the quarterbacks go 1-2. You know, you still had to think that there's going to be teams that were going to want Paxton Lynch, but that, you know, that didn't be the case. And a lot of people had tied Lynch to the Jets at 20 and thought maybe the Jets will trade up to get him. But, you know, I was told the morning of the draft that the Jets weren't that interested. There was really only one person in the Jets front office that had a real liking for Paxton Lynch, and that the head coach and the general manager weren't as big fans. And that showed up with their second-round pick when they took the Penn State quarterback. So, you know, so Lynch going where he did, I thought that was a little bit of a surprise. Any of the other picks in the first round, I think the biggest surprise from 25 on has to be Joshua Garnett, who San Francisco traded up out of the second round into the back end of the first to get, gave up a pick to get into that spot, the 28th slot. I thought they could have stayed right where they were and still got Garnett. You know, I think they probably just over-evaluated Garnett on their part. I don't think nobody I have talked to thought he was a first-round guy, more of a second-round guy, and some people thought he was a third-round guy. That's not taken away from his ability. The guy's a good football player. He's going to come in, he's going to start as a rookie. Just how many people saw him as a late first-round pick?
Yeah.
Greg, I want to ask you about the slide of the Alabama kids, one of whom you were certainly all over, and Reggie Ragland, the other two linemen. I don't think most of us saw it coming. But before I do that, I just want to quickly get back to the Jets. I know how you feel about Paxton Lynch. You said as much upside as any quarterback in this draft. Did they blow it? Was Christian Hackenberg in round two the wrong choice? I mean, you look at that quarterback room now, it's obviously it's a bit of a train wreck. Just take us through what you think the Jets' thinking was and if they can actually potentially trot out Christian Hackenberg in week one if this Ryan Fitzpatrick situation doesn't get resolved.
Well, number one, I've known Mike McKegnan for a long time, and he's a very good evaluator. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my opinion is they don't have the right guy. It's not that Paxton Lynch was the right guy. I'm just not a Hackenberg fan. I wouldn't take Hackenberg in the seventh round, let alone the second round. I just don't think he's an NFL quarterback. He has problems with accuracy, problems with awareness, can't avoid the rush. And players, he's a 55% completion percentage passer at the college level, and generally the numbers are higher at the college level because of the offenses that most of these kids play in. But my experience is that a passer who is inaccurate in college is never going to be accurate in the NFL level because the window to complete a pass is so much smaller at the NFL level. So, you know, it remains to be seen. I may be totally wrong. They may have found themselves a star. I know when you look at height, pure athleticism, arm strength, you know, he's got those traits. Mm-hmm. I think it ends right there. And, you know, from watching him play probably 8 to 10 games over the course of the last two seasons, I just don't see anything there. Obviously, they do. And, you know, we'll find out over the course of the next couple of years who was really right.
Right. Interesting stuff. And I guess maybe one thing at least going in their benefit is having those big-bodied wide receivers. If you're going to have an erratic quarterback, at least to have those guys with the big catch radius. But getting back to Alabama, Greg, I don't know how to phrase it. A, how lucky are the Seahawks and the Lions to have landed Jaron Reed and A'shaun Robinson where they did? And B, is this an illustration of a passing league where teams doubted their pass rush potential? Or what happened with these two sliding?
Well, I think that's what it is. And okay. You can look at the Chicago Bears draft as an example. The Bears went into this draft with the philosophy to get more athletic, get faster, more team speed, and to be able to rush the passer. That said, you know, they had opportunities. They traded down in the second round. They had opportunities to take either A'shaun Robinson or Jaron Reed at either one of the times they were drafting before they traded down twice in the second round, and they passed both times. So that tells you something. And then they came back in the third round, and they take the Florida defensive lineman, who was really a lot better, a little bit smaller, mm-hmm. not quite as stout against the run, but a lot better pass rusher and a lot more of an athletic-type player than the two Alabama players. And so I think it gets down to what's a team looking for. You're not taking anything away from the Alabama guys. They're stout guys against the run. I think, you know, in Robinson's case, he's only 20 years old, that he's going to become a better pass rusher than he is. But the fact is, he's still a 5'2", 5'3", 40 guy, doesn't have a lot of juice. And when you compare him to the Florida guy, you know, was a 4'9 guy. And he's gotten sacks. You know, he has the production already in his resume coming out of college.
Yeah, you saw that kind of philosophy of a passing league play out in a lot of different ways. I saw an interesting stat today from, I think it was Eric Edholm of Yahoo, said that more than 20% of all the draft picks were defensive backs in some way. And so you definitely saw that play out in different ways. Greg, I wanted to ask you, there's a lot that are probably going to pop up in your mind, but is there a team draft here that you really liked, and then one that you maybe kind of had your head scratching about? Any that jump out to you?
I don't know if there's any that I scratch my head, because you can go to all 32 teams right now, and they're all going to say they had a great draft. And I respect, you know, that feeling, because they all did the best job they could, and they put months and months and months of work into the process. So, and a lot of times we can sit back here as analysts and say they had a poor draft, they had a good draft, and it turns out to be the exact opposite.
Right.
So looking at a draft now, looking at it 2 or 3 years down the road, are two different things. Go back and, you know, we talked about the Chicago Bears a few minutes ago. Last year on paper, their draft didn't look that outstanding. You know, Kevin White, obviously a solid pick, but after that, you know, you could have argued other guys may have been better players to take at the positions they took, yet they had 4 starters come out of that draft and play a lot and contribute as rookies. That is an outstanding draft when you can get that many players as rookies come and make such a large contribution in their rookie year. So, you know, to look at it now I think is kind of foolish, and I'm against it, so I'll just wait and see. But drafts that I liked on paper, I like what Jacksonville did. David Caldwell is, you know, him and the coaching staff, they got the gun to their head. They have to win this year. They haven't won since that group has been there. And they've really stockpiled offensive players to help their quarterback. Blake Bortles is now going into his third year, but they had to take care of the defense. They started to last year with their first-round pick, and then he got hurt. Dante Fowler from Florida never stepped onto the field. And so now they get, he's back this year. Jalen Ramsey, who was the best corner in the draft, they take him with the 5th slot. Miles Jack, who dropped because of his medical condition, he was a legitimate top-5 guy. They get him in the 2nd round, and nobody said he wasn't going to be able to play and be productive as a rookie. They're looking at longevity, and that's why he dropped. And you get him, and then you get the Maryland guy, I can't pronounce his name, and Gukwe or something. Good edge rusher, situational edge rusher. And then the 4th round, Sheldon Day, who I think is going to be a very, very good 3 technique and a good inside pass rusher in his own right in the 4th round. So they got some good players. Then they got a sleeper, one of my sleepers in the draft in the 6th round, Tyrone Holmes from Montana, who, you know, went to an FCS level school, didn't get invited to the combine. Then at his pro day, he runs like 4.59, jumps out of the building, just put on a huge display, and then everybody got interested, and he ends up going, you know, in the sixth round. So I take my hat off to David. I thought he did a real good job. And the same thing with John Robinson in Tennessee. He's only been on the job as a general manager for 3 months, yet he's able to take the trade out of the first pick in the draft, trade down, get a bunch of picks over this year and next year, then uses some of those picks to trade back up into the top 10, gets the offensive tackle he needs and Jack Conklin. Got a combination five technique outside linebacker in Kevin Dodd, a nose tackle five technique in Austin Johnson, and then, in my opinion, one of the best running backs in the draft, Derrick Henry from Alabama, also in the second round. So I think they just did an outstanding job.
Spending just a few more minutes here with Pro Football Weekly draft guru Greg Gabriel. And Greg mentioned John Robinson, one of the new GMs who certainly put a value on building in the trenches. We saw that from the other rookie GM and Bill Belichick disciple, Bob Quinn in Detroit. Also, maybe, you know, foregoing style for substance with all the offensive line help and all the help in the trenches he got there. You did mention the Jaguars, Greg, and, you know, obviously did a terrific job, certainly getting, you know, arguably the two best defenders in the draft. And they only had to, they didn't have to trade back into the first round, which was remarkable. But I'd be remiss, if I didn't ask you about the other controversial injured linebacker and his destination. Of course, Notre Dame's Jaylon Smith going to the Cowboys. Did you think that that was the spot for the risk-reward? Did you think the Cowboys were the team, given they're always in win-now mode? They were desperate enough last year to get Greg Hardy, and then this year they seem to be content with maybe not getting anything from Smith ever, much less as a rookie. Just your thought on that that thought process for them.
Well, personally going in, I thought that, Jaylon probably wouldn't get drafted until Saturday, day three. Now, that said, the one advantage the Cowboys had over everybody else in the league is their doctor did the surgery.
Right.
Now, granted, he has to pass along that information to the other doctors in the league and give his feelings, but still, he's up close and personal. He did the surgery. He saw everything as close as you could see it, and he probably more than any or better than any other doctor in the league can look at the prognosis going forward. And you know, right now the Cowboys are betting on their orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Cooper, that Jaylon Smith is going to be up and ready to go in another year. So, you know, you look at the videos of some of the stuff that Jaylon has been doing recently. You know, he looks good, but he still has that drop foot condition. And until the nerve starts to regenerate and refire, it's never going to be in a situation where he could step on the field and play football again. So that's going to take time. Whether it's a month from now or 6 months from now, nobody has the answer to that. So I think we're just all hoping and praying that he does step on the field, because he is a great football player.
And just on the way out, Greg, we talked about not really doing these draft grades. We couldn't agree more. You got to wait 2-3 years at least. But this is a instant gratification world, and certainly with NFL fans. What about a guy on offense and a guy on defense where you just see an instant impact, maybe even rookie of the year candidates? Who seems to be in the right fit, seems to be on the right trajectory to really make a quick splash next season?
Well, I don't know if they're going to consider Kevin White a rookie for the Chicago Bears because he's actually been under contract for a year, but right, essentially he's a rookie. I would say, you know, he might come pretty close to that, but now offensive rookie of the year, I think it's going to be one of the two running backs. Either it's going to be Zeke Elliott or Derrick Henry. I don't see a receiver making that kind of impact. And then when you look at the defensive side of the ball, you know, it could be any of a number of guys. I think Bosa's going to have a huge impact at San Diego. Jalen Ramsey's going to have a huge impact at Jacksonville. As well, and use the Kevin White theory again, is Fowler going to be counted as a rookie or a second-year player?
Right.
Because he didn't play last year, but, you know, on the field, he's a rookie. And then you can look at a guy like DeForest Buckner with the 49ers. I think he has a chance to make a lot of big plays, as does Sheldon Rankins with the Saints. So I think any of those guys could put up some big numbers in their rookie year.
Good stuff, Greg. We promised we wouldn't keep you more than 20 minutes. Of course, I have now exceeded that, so I apologize. It has been such a pleasure to work together during this draft process, and even though we've got about another 8-9 months before we really start grinding on next year's prospects, please make sure you're not a stranger. We're going to reach out to you again in the near future.
Sounds good.
All right, Greg. Thanks again. It.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks.
And we thank Greg again for joining us. It has been so much fun getting his expertise on this podcast over the past 4 or 6 weeks. And don't worry, we will be bringing him in regularly as we continue to move forward. And I also don't want you to worry. I know the draft is in the rearview mirror, but there's still so much left to talk about. How these players assimilate into new systems, who's rising and falling on depth charts. And you guys know the NFL is a 365-day-a-year business. So we are going to keep the podcast coming to you regularly, and we hope you will continue to regularly download. That's going to do it for this week, but same time, same place next week on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thanks again for being with us.
Shaw Media Podcast Network has a lot of really great sports podcasts, but are you more than just a sports fan?
You need to be listening to The Unprintable Podcast, which is a pop culture podcast with voices from journalists like myself, Nicole Franz.
And me, Jason Frummer.
As we discuss TV, movies, and of course, Jason's favorite subject,
music.
We'll also have some arts coverage, and you can catch special guests and exclusive interviews.
It's all right here on Unprintable. You can find us in the Shaw Media Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Remember,
it's unprintable.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkush, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to profootballweekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.